Hi, everybody. This is Mary. And today I'm going to be speaking on one part of what has been referred to as the Jesus Creed. I'm going to read excerpts from Luke 10, 22 to 37, as well as Matthew 22, 34 to 40. They're the same story, but they're told in slightly different ways, so I've taken some liberties and combined the two. An expert in the law wanted to test Jesus and ask him a question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, "You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. This is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the other commandments and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two." I was really excited about John's invitation to speak on this series of love because for several years now, God has been taking me on this deep dive into the topic. And I thought I might have something meaningful to contribute. But as is typical of Satan, not long after I said yes, he began to attack and make me feel like the biggest fraud on the topic. He was challenging my ability to truly love other people and that were kind of challenging in my life. And I'm certainly not an expert in the love your neighbor portion of this subject, but in praying about this sermon, I felt God pushing me towards speaking on it anyway. I'm going to try to be honest with you about my struggles in the hopes that some of it will be relatable. And maybe we can all learn something together on how loving God, loving yourself, and loving others can all intermingle and synergize into one powerful weapon against darkness. So let's begin. Have you ever been in a circumstance with a relative, a work associate, or a friend where they pushed your buttons, pushed you to your limits, made you want to hide under the covers and scream or cry, and every effort you made to put your best selves forward left you feeling like a fraud or a hypocrite, where their brokenness exposed your own shortcomings and became like this heavy grit sandpaper on your heart, and it left you feeling raw, scorched, humbled, and feeling really vulnerable? My whole adult life, I've had this dream, this vision of a place where people could come and feel love, grace, mercy, restoration, healing. It was one of the main motivators behind my wanting to have this property that John and I are now living on. And there have been so many times when I thought I was ready. It was a good dream. It was a good vision that I believe God had inspired. And I have begged God to open the doors for it to unfold on more occasions than I can count. But on just as many times, he's told me, not yet. Until recently, I did not understand why, but precisely because of Satan's attack, I've come to understand a little better why I wasn't ready, and learning this fact has not been a walk in the park, let me tell you. In this day and age, we use that word love so flippantly, don't we? I love apple pie. Oh, I love that sweater. I just love that song, that puppy, the color blue. Emojis everywhere, and we sigh deeply and feel satisfied, me for certain. But the kind of love that God has been teaching me about in recent times isn't this Hallmark movie, saccharine, sappy, easy love. It's the most powerful weapon against evil and darkness. It's not easy to learn, and it's not easy to live. It requires a focus on Jesus and a disciplined mind about the thoughts that we entertain. It's so easy to love people that we enjoy, who are fun to be around, who think like us, who treat us fairly, who include us, recognize us in affirming ways, behave decently according to our definition of that word, those who value our contribution and appreciate our efforts, who don't rock our boat or make waves in our world. And when you surround yourself with these kinds of people, it's easy to believe that you're good at loving others. But what about when someone enters the scene that stirs your pot? What about the people who reject you and make you feel unwelcome for no reason you can put your finger on, who avoid eye contact with you or will leave a room just because you walked in? What about the ones who have habits and ways of being that rub you the wrong way, or those whose beliefs are skewed differently than your own and just speaking to them upsets you? What about people who are unskillful in their words or obnoxious or just annoying in their behaviors? What if that describes the vibe that you get from someone else about how they think of you and it hurts? Where their brokenness, like I said, exposes your own shortcomings, It makes you feel like anything you have ever learned about loving others was inadequate to meet the moment. And all that you still had to learn shows up in ways that hurt the other person and creates awkwardness that's hard to move forward from even after apologies have been made. Do you just cut them out of your life or avoid them completely? Or do you paste on a smile when you're with them and pretend that you like them and everything is just fine while in the background, in your thoughts, you're vilifying them or justifying your own behavior and you're running this little internal courtroom defense against them? I have done and experienced most of the above. And in the past, when I've not acted as my best self and felt bad about it, it would have put me under heavy condemnation, or I would have spent a lot of time self-justifying, or maybe I would just go into hiding and attempt to numb out those nasty, unwanted feelings until they went away. But this is not a productive place to be, and feeling condemned, crippled, and guilty is not from God, and you need to know that. To love God with our whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to be able to love our neighbor as ourselves starts with intimately learning how unconditionally loved we are by God, not based on our performance, as in always acting as our best self, but because our shortcomings are not a surprise to him, and we are always being seen by him through the eyes of love. And it's a love that knows how to use these moments to lead us to higher places, which is all God is concerned about in these moments anyway. It's a process that takes time to cultivate, though. And for me, it's taken years of daily time spent with God. But there has been a shift in me that has allowed God to correct me in a way that I don't feel scolded. Rather, I believe that as his dearly loved child, God loves me too much not to correct. I'm actually grateful for those types of convictions. They've instead become, like I referenced before, that heavy grit sandpaper, but in a good way. It's kind of carving off all the rough edges and circumcising my heart all the way to its core and teaching me deep-seated lessons I wanted to learn and I still want to learn about 70 times 7 forgiveness, mercy, humility, dependence on him, and the importance of taking every thought captive and making it submit to him, to name a few. I kind of see it like university courses in the art of loving others. Even though the lessons are difficult, the up-learning is just so worth it. So I believe he has been allowing these people into my life in ways where the stakes are high, and learning this skill is important to expose areas needing growth that I really would only look at because the outcome meant so much to me and to the others. In these circumstances, he's been asking me to examine my own behaviors and the contribution that my thought life makes in my responses towards them. And with his help, be accountable for them. He's teaching me how to offer grace, mercy, love, peace, healing, restoration in increasingly authentic ways to those who need it. Because in all honesty, and in spite of the difficulty, if not for them, then who? And after all, these are the skills that are needed for me to live out the vision that he's given me. And so learning how to do them well and at more skillful levels is essential, really. So very briefly, how is he doing that? For me right now, it's in two critically important areas, forgiveness and the area of my thought life. Joyce Meyer has a lot to say on this subject, and I would suggest looking her up on a podcast or YouTube if you want a deeper teaching. But in a nutshell, here it is. I've heard that love is a choice, and that is true, but it's also a feeling. You don't need to feel love in order to behave in a loving manner, but if you want the way you love others to be authentically experienced, then both have to be present. Loving simply as an act of the will is not enough. As Scott McKnight put it in his book, The Jesus Creed, this full-bodied love is a term that is almost indefinable. It is unconditional regard for a person that prompts and shapes behaviors in order to help that person become what God desires. Love, when working properly, is both emotion and will, affection and action. Next, let me explain the distinction by way of an example that God has used in my own life. There's a person that I've worked with who regularly and clearly communicated non-verbally that I just was not her favorite person. Even though she was never openly and directly rude to me, she always found a way to avoid walking with me from point A to point B, avoiding eating with me in the same room, unless there was somebody else in the room to talk to. She would just say that she had some charting to do or something and just go eat at her desk. She refused to make eye contact with me at most times, and when she did, it really looked painful to her. To this day, I have no idea why. To confront her on it just seemed absurd because there really was nothing. We had never had any sort of a quarrel or interaction that would account for it. And I can honestly see how she tried to cover it up, but I'm an empath and I feel the temperature in the room very quickly, and it certainly did in these circumstances. I would say that this is an example of when love as a choice is all that is offered. I could see her effort at civility, but when it lacked the emotional conveyance of even collegial friendship at the very least, it really felt short and was experienced as hurtful, even when the effort to not be was present. This has given me insight into the term toxic positivity. When my decisions to see and express silver linings or to offer love in action don't match up with what I think or feel, it can be come across as so inauthentic to the recipient and be experienced as a negative in spite of my effort not to be. This can also happen when we attempt to go halfway in the forgiveness process. Have you ever been hurt by someone and chose to forgive them and thought you did, but then found that when something unrelated would bump up against that scar, you would find yourself having to forgive them all over again? I sure have, and it's been frustrating. But what Joyce Meyer pointed out and what I'm currently working to learn is that scripture tells us to love our enemies and do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, and pray for those who mistreat you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. This is found in Luke 6:35. And whether or not you see the people you need to forgive as enemies who hate you, when you set out to thoroughly forgive them, we need to choose it, pray for God's help to do that. And then here's the follow through that we often find difficult and fail to do, but it's critical to moving towards having our feelings and actions match. We need to pray for them to be blessed. And when called upon to do something kind for them, we need to do it. I realize that there's some relationships where there's an imbalance of power and safety is an issue. And navigating all of this is much more complex and requires a depth of wisdom that isn't covered in the scope of this sermon. But all the same, praying for them and doing what you need to in order to release bitterness from your heart is still important to your own well-being. And it's an important ingredient in healing and moving beyond their treatment of you. I do recognize that praying for people to be blessed, the ones that have hurt us, can sometimes really pinch. But according to Joyce Meyer, and it makes sense to me as well, the prayer for blessing can be the thing that opens the door for God to help them gain spiritual insight into their own behavior and their own unique need for his presence in their life. And then if God compels you to meet a need in their life, whether it's showing a kindness, doing a favor, offering them some sort of generosity that he's asked you to do, then do it. The kindness God may ask you to do for them could be simply, and not so simply, be to choose to no longer speak of them in negative manners in front of others, which can be really difficult to do. And then again, it may also be something maybe that he asked you to do on a more practical level. But I would suggest, even if it's hard, for your own heart, do it. There's a ripple effect for this choice. And whether or not this brings about reconciliation or positive change in the relationship, it really does have as much to do with the response and choice of the other as it does you. You have no control over their response, and it really doesn't matter. As much as it depends on you, live at peace with all people. This is your part, and it is critically important to the well-being of all your relationships, because if you harbor bitterness and unforgiveness in your heart towards one relationship, that actually becomes the toxin that will infiltrate and affect every other relationship you have. It'll come out in your conversations, your ability to trust, to love unreservedly, and it'll seep into and impact your disposition in all of them. It will find its way into the messages you teach your children and those in your sphere of influence, and it will ultimately impact the ability for blessing to flow into your own life. I believe our decision to forgive and release, or our choice to hold on to bitterness and unforgiveness, has the ability to alter our life's trajectory and the lives of those who are learning from us. Just think about that for a moment. Take the seeds of bitterness and unforgiveness, and then forgiveness and release, and let them grow into a full-grown fruit-bearing tree in your imagination. Which one opens your life up to the most joy and the opportunity for God to redeem and work out the situation for your good? Can you see it? And it's really difficult to maintain negative emotions towards someone you're sincerely praying for and acting generously towards. Light casts out darkness, and this is the indestructible light kind of love that breaks the schemes of Satan and all his strongholds that he uses in order to create divisions and chaos and strife in your relationships. He would love nothing more than for negativity to rule our lives. Don't let him gain that advantage and foothold in your life. 1 John 3:8 says the reason Jesus came to earth was to undo this work of Satan, and we're partners with him in that work. Tim Mackey, in his sermon, Make Me Clean, which can be found on YouTube, I really recommend this. It was excellent. It made the powerful point that Jesus is not afraid to touch our uncleanness. Just like darkness can't swallow light, we don't infect him with our brokenness. He cleanses us with his righteousness. It's the whole reason he came to earth, to restore it and us to the garden state. And by the same token, our presence is meant to have a cleansing effect in the lives of others. But this can only happen through the intimate communion with Jesus and living out this concept of forgive, pray for, bless, and do good when we have complications come up in our relationships. I've been learning how important our thought life is to this whole process and how quickly and easy I can fall into negative thoughts about others. If there are times that my mouth gets the better of me in these challenging relational situations, it's usually because of the attitudes that I've allowed to develop as a result of what I've been allowing myself to ruminate on in my mind. Joyce Meyer put it this way: attitude is an inward thought that wiggles its way out. Isn't that good? I think that bears repeating. Attitude is an inward thought that wiggles its way out. Negativity in the mind can also cause us to hide from God, which we don't want to be in his presence. But it's the exact opposite of what we need to be doing. It is in and through him that victory comes, and he's not surprised, nor is he holding our struggles against us. The battlefield is truly in your mind, and Satan is constantly trying to gain real estate there. So guard your thought life and ask for help at the onset. Scripture says, every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ. As a man thinks in his heart, so he is. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things, and the God of peace will be with you. When we choose to not overly dwell on the ways that others fall short in our estimation, and instead focus on their strengths in our thought lives, this is grace in action. Having done this work in advance is necessary to having your best self show up when those challenging conversations happen. It will help you to enter the discussion from a posture of love rather than fear. It will also help you to cultivate and choose a posture of curiosity and listening in order to discover what really is driving the other person's perspective or behavior, rather than feeling the need to attack and defend. Two courses that I've found helpful in learning a healthier way to have these talks are the Emotionally Healthy Spirituality and Emotionally Healthy Relationship courses. And if you're interested in knowing more, contact John Limmer at the church for when these may be offered again in the future. I've really found them helpful. I'm still at the deep throes of learning these skills in these charged times for certain. It never ends. It's a lifetime of communion with God and of learning how to love ourselves and others well. When I'm feeling pensive and my spirit is stirred within me and I feel the need to deeply commune with God for help, I often go and sit by the water and I pray with my Bible and my journal. There are often moments of deep intimacy with him when I use my pen to reach out, and then how I've heard him speak through the words that are unfolding on the page. I want to share a couple of poems that I wrote in such times where he's been helping me to learn not to run from him and hide, but to seek him out and to partner well. So here goes. Meet me here, where the waters lap the shoreline and the sand feels cool and soft beneath my feet, where the breezes kiss my cheek and the sun warms my face. Speak to me. I hear the birds' chirps and the laughter of the waves, the rustle of the leaves and my own sighing breath. Hear my call, the voice of longing, a heart filled with the beats of love, of hope, of an unshakable desire to meet you here. I think of you in my waking thoughts, promises of faithfulness, of provision, of constant presence and unshakable, unquenchable love, thoughts that stir my heart. I want to know what it's like to experience this kind of relationship, to feel the synergy of belonging, the rhythm of partnership. Are you somewhere in this sensual caressing, or is it just a mystical tease? Where is the object of my desire and of my longing heart? You asked me to be still and know you as God, and to the best of my ability, I'm honoring my side of the bargain. Will you meet me, speak to me, hear me? Make your presence known. I'm waiting expectantly. Barrier sands swirl to eternal ones, hand tracking hand in a dance of circles, following, leading. Will you dance with me, Mary? Let go of your boxy shoes and feel the grains of sand beneath your feet. Feel my arm at your waist and my fingers entwining yours, my heartbeat in your ear and my breath in your hair. Will you dance with me and trust me to lead you? Timeless music, a song of love, the synergy of souls long known, powerful progression in the safety of wisdom. Don't run, stay, dance with me, Mary. Trust my mastery, follow my lead and dance with me. Hide in the shadows no more. Fill your lungs with the sweet perfume of life, intoxicating and freeing, filled with meaning. I will dance. Though my heart is beating wildly, I will drink in the succor of your grace. Until the fluttering subsides, until my breathing softens and my eyes take in nothing but yours. Oh, exquisite wonder, the synchrony of movement, floating over waters in one accord. Meet with me, dance with me. Dance with me, Mary, neath the sky of crystalline blue, near the waters so cool. Be refreshed in the song and the warmth of my arms. Be shadowed in love in the words of my mouth, spoken in silence to your heart. Only you hear, but you hear. No one sees you sway, eyes closed, ears open, moving your feet with mine. I know who you love. I know what it takes to awaken your senses to dance. There's so much more to be said on this topic. It's a lifelong journey, but I'm learning foundationally that the key to loving God has been in knowing how much he loves me. How he loves me and correcting what he expects of me has been the key to learning to love myself. And the key to loving others, truly loving them, I'm still learning. But as a great way to start, it's in learning to guard my thought life, be quick to forgive, praying for God to bless them, and looking for ways to be generous. God is calling me to dance, and he's calling you too. May God bless you in all your own journeys to loving God, yourself, and others more effectively. By way of a closing prayer, I'll share one more poem of an invitation to dance. Look at me, Mary. Don't be afraid. I'm not disappointed. Let every fear fade. Hand in my hand at your back. There's mastery in following and nothing you'll lack. Follow my rhythm, you won't miss a beat. The dance floor is waiting, the music's so sweet. There's life in each stanza, your heart beats a song. Enjoy all the learning, you're where you belong. Dance with me, Mary, beloved my friend. Surrender to splendor till eternity ends. Dance with me, Mary. I will dance. And come, join the dance. Amen.